बद्धत्वभावे सति मोक्षचिन्ता बद्धत्वभावे सति मोक्षचिन्ता कन्दस्तुकस्येति विचारणेन भन्दस्तुकस्येति विचारणेन सिद्धे स्वयं स्वात्मनि नित्यमुक्ते सिद्धे स्वयं स्वात्मनि नित्यमुक्ते कुबन्धचित्ता क्वच मोक्षचिन्ता कुबन्धचिन्ता क्वच मोक्षचिन्ता बद्धत्वभावे सति मोक्षचिन्ता बन्धः तु कस्य इति विचारणेन सिद्धे स्वयं स्वात्मनि नित्यमुक्ते नित्यमुक्ते क्व बन्धचिन्ता क्व च मोक्षचिन्ता बद्धत्वभावे सति. This is an absolute locative construction in the Sanskrit. It says, when there's the bhava, means when there's the sense or the feeling, you know, of bondage. So that sati just means when there is that. When there is that inside, when you have that feeling of bondage in the form I feel bound or I feel limited. So when that is there, then moksha chinta. Then there's this chinta. Chinta can be anxiety. There's a, you know, anxious thinking about moksha. Is there any such thing as moksha? How to get that moksha? How to get that liberation? So chinta means anxiety or just thinking or anxious thinking, you know, kind of worried. Is there such a thing as moksha? What is it? How do I get it? We have this type of thinking. Is there such a thing as liberation when we ourselves feel bound? If you're not feeling bound, you're not feeling a need for liberation, right? So the one evokes the other. So it says, and it's this first statement, when there's a sense of bondage, then one thinks about liberation. One's concerned about the possibility of moksha, of liberation. But then he says, bandhahatu, but bandhahatu kasya iti vicharanena. He says, but by the vichara, vichara means that inquiry, the analysis. By the vichara, this vichara, by the vichara that of this, he asks a question, bandha kasya, who is bound? By that vichara, by going into that type of inquiry, who is the one that is actually bound? So through this vichara, through this type of inquiry, then he says, siddhe swayam swatmani nitya mukte. Through that inquiry, when one's own self, swatmani, swa-atmani, in the locative, swa means one's own, when one's own atma, swatmani, nitya mukte, which by nature is nitya mukta, by nature it is liberated. Nitya means free from time. It's liberate. It's not a liberation that's time bound. It's a liberation that by its nature, by its very nature, is timeless. So the self being timeless and free, the freedom, the liberation of the self itself is timeless. So it says, when the self, which is always liberated, right, is established, siddha, means when that is recognized, when that is established, then he says, kubandachinta, where is there any concern about bondage? Kwa means where. Where would the concern arise around bondage? And kucha moksha chinta. And where would there be concern arising about moksha? Because if this, once the self is recognized, once your self is discovered, that self is never subject to bondage or liberation. In other words, if I say it's not subject to liberation, it's already liberated. And so it doesn't have to become liberated. But what if it's liberated but subject to time, and therefore, just like everything in the world changes, it could change from its liberated state into a bound state. And so then if I have that kind of time-bound liberation, then I have to worry about how to keep it, you know? Just like in samsara, when everything is going right for you, everything is perfect, it's only momentary, and we all know that. So we have this sense of, all is well with me. Now, how do I maintain that? Mm-hmm. So then I get this moksha chinta, you know? I have the moksha, but I'm afraid of the bondage. that's going to come as a result of just the natural flow of time. What if the self which is recognized, what if your self which is recognized, and that self itself is free of time, and by its nature is liberated, then the whole question of bondage and liberation disappears. That's the idea. So, let's just take a look at that. When he says by vichara, it's by the inquiry into who is actually the bound one. You know, that's a very interesting inquiry, because if you start analyzing who is the one that is bound, right, it's going to either be your mind or a concept in your mind, or your physical body which is ill and subject to death, you know, your sense organs which are failing. You know, my sense organs are failing, so they're bound. They're not keeping up with, you know, they're not supplying me. They're not working as they should be working, and so they're becoming a limitation. So I become aware of that limitation. The physical body is not as healthy as it used to be, perhaps, and so I'm becoming aware of that physical limitation. Or I'm aware of a friend who is dying, and I become aware, once again, in your own age group, somebody is dying, and then you become aware of the limitation of this physical body. You become aware of birth and death. It happens to us all the time. And so if I were to really hone in on where is the bondage located and for whom, say, well, the birth and death of the body, that bondage is located on the body. The illness of the body, that bondage is located, that limitation is located in the body. The body is bound. The mind, which is subject to all of these moods and emotions, the mind is bound because I can't control. You know, if the mind was always happy or always felt like my mind is whole and complete, I wouldn't have a thought of bondage. You know, I wouldn't arise because my mind is by its very nature whole and complete. That's what the mind is. But that's not our experience. Our experience is the mind gives us glimpses of being whole and complete, and also glimpses, you know, and experiences of being bound. So this duality of pleasure and pain, you know, the duality of pleasure and pain is something which is continually, which I'm continually suffering. It's even like, you know, the Buddhists say, and the Vedantins also, but that any sukha, any pleasure, is really a dukkha yoni. Dukkha yoni means a womb for sorrow. Because within time, within samsara, any moment of pleasure doesn't stop there. You know, like a camera, you take a still shot. There's no still shot. Right? Every single moment, every single experience moves on, without exception. You know, it's even true. In fact, this should give us some solace. It's even true for the negative experiences. They also move on, you know. We don't tend to think like that. Many times you think when there's a negative experience there, it's like, is this ever going to pass? You're not sure. You're kind of afraid. Is this ever going to pass? And it always does pass. But we don't feel that way with a positive. We know it's going to pass. We have a positive situation and it's like, how long is this going to last? You know? It's funny that we don't have that same feeling toward the more painful situation. But if you were to analyze really where is the bondage landing, and then what does that state of bondage have to do with me? This is an unordinary vichara. We don't usually do this vichara, this type of analysis, because until we become a mumukshu means somebody who really is questioning, seriously questioning, not just as a passing thought, is there such a thing as liberation? Is there such a thing as being a whole and complete being, no matter what the circumstance? See, we all know that we can be whole and complete every time I fulfill a desire, but we also are burdened by the momentariness of it. We've all had glimpses of it. You know, Swamiji's used the example of, and this is, of course, one of the problems, you know, in India when they make madras coffee, Yeah. Madras coffee is, it's, you know, the beans, green beans are gotten in. It's a whole ritual for making it, where they roast the beans, because it's just perfect scent, the oil and everything. Then they grind it, and it just becomes just a wonderful process. And everybody waits in the morning for the mother to make the coffee, you know. And there's such a thing as the perfect cup of coffee. The perfect cup of coffee. Mm-hmm. And when you have that perfect cup of coffee, mm-hmm. it becomes the standard bearer. You know, you know that such a thing exists. In fact, I had this experience Saturday where I made it. You know, I make the chai in the morning for everybody. Everybody really liked the chai on Saturday. Everybody said, this chai is so good. This chai is really good. Because we have that standard, you know. We have a standard. And so for ourselves also, we have a standard. And it goes kind of like this. This is how it's supposed to be. It's not even it. This is how I'm supposed to be. This is who I really am. This is me. But then the next, and you know it. Because it is you. You know it. There's no doubt about it. This is me. This is how I'm supposed to be. But then, of course, the fear comes immediately. How do I keep that? How do I hang on to that? And then you watch it kind of, sadly, you watch it, you know, with some sorrow. You watch that get covered over again. And so there's sadness in that experience, but there's also hope. Because when you have that experience, you know that there is such a thing as that perfect cup of coffee. This is who I am. This is what I'm supposed to be. But I have no idea, you know, how to hang on to that. You know, and so I have this chinta, this anxiety. Why? Because I don't, that perfect cup of coffee or that sense of wholeness, of me really being me, who I am, continually slips away. And the fact that it slips away, that is the bandha, that's the bondage. And what if it never slipped away? Then the thought of bondage wouldn't be there. My being is whole and complete. And that's the end of it. That's what he means by nitya mukta. I'm whole when who you are actually is recognized through vichara. But the vichara, the analysis, is what we call a viveka. That's the particular word for this type of analysis, viveka. Because myself, if it is nitya mukta, if I am by my nature whole and complete, not bound by time. If you're whole and complete and it's not your wholeness is not subject to time, that means it's not subject to past, present, and future. If your very presence itself is changeless, and that presence, by its very nature, is mukta, is liberated. Now, if that is the case, as he says, when one's own self, which is nitya mukta, by its nature, full, whole, complete, liberated, not subject to becoming unwhole. It's free of time. It's nitya mukta. When that is siddha, now, siddha, we can take that in a number of ways. Siddha means that which is established, that which is self-evident, that which is recognized to be true. It's also a goal that is reached. Like, for instance, the word sadhana. Sadhana means the means that I use to get somewhere. Siddha is having accomplished that which is accomplished. So, say if I say, when myself, which is by its very nature, free, when that has been recognized, we're not going to accomplish it. You can't accomplish it because it's yourself. This is also a little subtle thing to understand. You can't accomplish yourself in terms of reaching it or gaining it. There's not going to be an accomplishment like that. Because then who are you that's accomplishing it? Right? That's why we say self-knowledge is the accomplishment of the accomplished. Prapasya prapti. Self-knowledge is the recognition of what is already there. It would have to be. You're not going to become, if you're going to become a free self, then that free self is time-bound because you are becoming, right? And if you're becoming, then that free self that you're experiencing is just another piece of samsara. It's another momentary experience. So you either are free and whole, and therefore you don't have to protect it, you don't have to work for it, you are it, and you are free from time. Or you are bound, you are bound in the world to behave in a particular way so as to protect your experience of well-being. You know, and this is what a lot of spiritual disciplines do. They give you a practice which actually is very effective. It's very effective if you can practice the practice. Of course, that's a problem, but if you can practice the practice that is given to you, it gives the mind a certain sense of freedom. Most of all of these have to do with non-clinging and with what we call vairagya, where vairagya means I come to a recognition in terms of all of the things in my experience that these things actually, all of them, without exception, and I meditate on this and I think about it and I live my life kind of in a disciplined state where I actually spend time recognizing the truth of this, that there is nothing in the world that is not a dukkha-yoni. There is nothing in the world that doesn't have the potential of causing dukkha, sorrow. Another way of saying it, there is nothing in the world that is a sukha that will give me a happiness that is free of sorrow, a happiness that itself won't convert into sorrow. Now, if I have spent time recognizing this fact, and it's not that it's not a fact, it is a fact. You know, that's why, I mean, the Buddha has done a lot with that. And all of the Eastern disciplines spend a lot of time making you understand this fact. Now, what do you do? How are you going to relate to the world if you understand this fact about the nature of all things in the creation? You have to relate to the world in such a way that acknowledges that fact. And so, what do you think? Say you acknowledge the fact that there is nothing in the world that is not subject to time, not subject to birth and death, not subject to change. There is no state of pleasure, no state of anything that is not subject to change. Now, what would the safest attitude be toward that object? And it would be something like this. Enjoy it while it's there. Let it be. Well, while it's there, enjoy it. And when it's ready to go, let it go. That's what we mean by non-clinging or vairagya. Vairagya means dispassion. You know, don't hang on to things that can't be hung on to. You know, you're breaking your heart, really. And so say, I think I was going into this the other day, I actually like this one. If we think that we love someone, or we love something. We think that, but it isn't true. It's not true at all. We love, I mean, usually it's not true, but it's true, then my apologies, but let me just tell you what I'm thinking here. What we love is that person in a particular form, or that thing in a particular form, or that job in a particular form, or that employer in a particular form, the employee in a particular form, any given object, any given thing in my sphere evokes my happiness, you know, when it is in a particular form. There's many forms that it can be in that evoke my sorrow and evoke my suffering. You know, ask like a mother who has children, whom she definitely, I know, I don't have children myself, my sisters and brother do, so I've grown up with them, I know what it is. And I know what I did to my mother also. We must all know what we did to our parents. You know? the more, it's, it kind of goes like this, like an equation. The more love, the more grief. The more love, the more grief. And that's really the nature of samsara. That's what we're caught in. Now, in the midst of this, the more love, the more grief, in the midst of this samsara, we have had that perfect cup of coffee. You know, we have had those moments where I feel so whole and so complete, and that we've even had, like, I would call them spiritual experiences that are great, what do you call them, markers, you know, for wayfarers. They're markers along the way where you feel whole and complete. So your mind is whole and complete in spite of the situation. You have this experience. We all have had this experience. You're whole and complete in spite of the situation. And not only that, you had experiences where you love everybody in your situation because you're a loving person. Not really because of them. These are spiritual experiences that when you have them, you would like to keep them. You know? Oh, look at this moment. At this moment, I actually feel love for, and not intellectually, I actually feel love for all beings. You know? That's how I should be. Okay. That's how I should be. That's how I want to be. You know? Or at this given moment, no matter what is going on in the situation, I feel free. I feel free in the situation. Even though it's not something that I would necessarily choose, I feel free. Then I think, this is budding mumukshas. Then I think, this is how I should be. This is what I want to be. I don't want the world, and I'm not so delusional, to think that the world is going to become, to change, to become something that is just serving me. Oh, this is what she wants, so I'll give her that. I'm not delusional to think that. But I would like to be able to be whole and complete in that situation, whatever it is, to be free in that situation. In fact, that type of freedom is what we call vairagya. In some ways we call, and in terms of the practice, it's called non-clinging. But we call that vairagya. And the example that I've used often, that Swamiji often uses also, is the helium balloon example. Imagine, you know, a little child with a helium balloon. We used to get one when I was little. My brothers and sisters and I, we used to go to the, we used to always go to the boardwalk in Santa Cruz. My parents would take us, and we always got to get a balloon. It was one of the thrilling things, a hat and a balloon. From the boardwalk. So we all picked out a hat, and we all got a balloon. And invariably, you know, always the hat would last longer than the balloon. So the balloon would go. Somehow it would either, you know that awful feeling when you watch the big balloon kind of lose its air and it just becomes like
sags
thing, or somebody lets their balloon go and it's always a trauma and, well, we're going to get another balloon or not, and always there's no vairagya there at all. Absolutely, my happiness is directly related to what happens to the balloon. Okay? But you know, when you're an adult, that is probably not at all your relationship to the balloon. And what's so nice about that is that you can have fun with it, you can enjoy it, you can get a kick out of it, and you can also watch it go up in the air, and you're absolutely fine. And if for some reason, you know, you're waiting in line to get your balloon and they run out of balloons, you know, or a little child in back of you wants a balloon and the only last one left, so you're graciously, such a big-hearted person, you give the little child your balloon. Yeah. All of these things, you're such a saintly person. That's vairagya. That is vairagya, because this object, the balloon, is fine when it's there, and it's absolutely fine when it's not. If it comes into my space, I can enjoy it, and if it goes out, that's fine. There's no one in me whose happiness is dependent on that balloon. I am totally free in reference to it. Now, if you think about the balloon, you can just realize that you do have vairagya, a very mature vairagya, that type of dispassion toward most things in the universe. In fact, most things in the universe you don't even know about. So they don't even come into question, you know. But there are so many, 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 many things that it's fine if it's there and it's fine if it's not there. But then we have the inner circle of our life, you know. And in the inner circle, you know, that balloon vairagya is not completely there. Whereas for someone, just from a very Vedantic perspective, to really be free, that vairagya is across the board. It is fine when it's there, it's fine when it's not there. No exceptions. Now, that is not so easy, because to come to that type of relationship with absolutely everything in the creation, your body, your sense organs, the moods and emotions in your mind. Swamiji once said, you know, the funny thoughts that pass through, you know. To have that type of relationship, to be with it when it's there, it's almost like I think Rumi said in one of his poems, you know, to welcome it when it's there as a guest, you know, and when it's not there, to help it go on its way. To have that type of wholeness, you know, that type of freedom, because what it means that in spite of the world is here, your life, your inner circle is here, and you are completely, there's not anything, when we say vairagya, you shouldn't feel like this, dispassion, you know. It's not about that. It's about being, really, being able to be totally present to your life, you know. But allowing the life to be what it is without it having the ability to evoke your sorrow. If that is the samsara, where I love you, but you have to be like this. And especially since I love you, you have to be like this, because because I've invested all this love in you, and that means that you can cause me great pain. So why did you even get involved with me in the first place? When I've given you my heart, you know, and you're abusing it. You're abusing my heart, you know. So the more you love, the more grief that is there. It's true. And when it's that type of love, when it's the type of love that, which is all of our love, you know, the only type of love that is not that is what is the love of moksha, means the self. Relational love is like that. It all follows the desire template. I need this to be happy. Yeah. I could say, and this is where we get confused about this. Your loved one, you can say, I need you to be happy. For me to be happy, I need you. Mm-hmm. But that isn't really true. Mm-hmm. Because the other person would just say, and I'm here. I'm here. But no. I need you. I need you to be like this. I need you to be like this. That's how it is. And then we can become connoisseurs. No, not quite like that. Dad, you're getting closer. Yeah. So, you know, we're trying to squeeze blood from a stone, because you're trying by that when we use that, trying to squeeze blood from a stone. What that means is that we're trying to squeeze, you know, the love, that sense of wholeness, out of something which actually doesn't enjoy it. It doesn't own the wholeness. It doesn't own the well-being to be able to give it to you. It's total, the whole thing. The whole thing is a total illusion. That's the problem. So what happens is that you love somebody because somehow you've connected deeply, somebody or something, whatever it is, you've connected so deeply, you know, and in the presence of that person at that particular time, everything that you've wanted, at least at that particular time, is fulfilled. And so I want you to be like this, and you are exactly like this. I want you to be. I love you when you're like this, and you're like this. And so at that time, my mind has no desire. This is the key. At that time, I have a desireless mind because I've just gotten what I wanted. So you have a few seconds there of desireless mind. A desireless mind is a free mind. A desireless mind is not asking for anything. It has the shantavritti. Shantavritti means the thought modification at that time is completely still, clear and clean. It's like a clear water bucket reflecting the sun. You know, that water bucket could have been muddy or agitated, and the sun was all, you know, hyper or dulled by the mud, but all of a sudden, the water becomes crystal clear, and the sun is as though vibrant, true to itself, sitting there in the mind, as though. And so when your mind takes on this very, very smooth, very, very quiet state, it's not interfering with you. It's not contributing anything. And you're being like the sun, just manifests like crazy in that mind. You are already, you don't need to manifest. Your being is already, the me, the self that you are, it already is. As you are, you always are. You don't need to manifest in the mind. The wholeness of yourself is ever present. However, we're not used to doing any type of viveka or any type of vichara to recognize really the one, that the nature of the one that is illuminating all this changing phenomena. We don't even know to do that. The mind is always only concerned with its own state. And the mind, because there's a mind there, there's what we call an ahankara. The ahankara is where the mind itself, the thoughts say, I am, because it's identifying with me, the conscious being, and then it will identify with any state of experience that is there. So say, for instance, you're having your partner or your loved one or the situation is not behaving as you would like it to, and then your mind is very upset. And so then what do you say? What is the mind say? It says, I am upset. That's the ahankara. It means the one thought. Ahankara, the I thought, is just a thought. I am thought. You don't have to have the I am thought, it's just a thought. But you have it, and it always, what the I am thought does, it identifies with the state of experience that the mind is having. Or it identifies with the body. I am healthy, I am sick. Or it identifies with the state of the sense organs. Anything about my body, mind, sense organs, the I thought rises and lands on, you know, whatever it is that I'm experiencing. So now, say the mind, which has this I thought, it's one of the things that it can think. Say it says it fulfills a desire is filled in the mind, and then the I thought comes, the ahankara says, I'm so happy. Mm. I am so whole. Mm. I am so complete. This is how I'm supposed to be. This is what it is. This is the perfect cup of coffee. This is me. Now, the thing is, there's some truth in that and some untruth in it. The thing is, at that moment, your mind, which by its nature is continually changing, right? Just by its nature, mm-hmm. It can have a happy thought, a sad thought, a calm thought, an agitated thought, a hateful thought, an angry thought, a comical thought, whatever kind, whatever emotion you can have, whatever type of intellection, whatever type of memory, has thought after thought after thought, mood after mood after mood. That's the mind. And so, at the times when this mind of mine is put in a situation where your desire is fulfilled. Or it could even be, it can be very momentary, like your little niece or nephew or child runs up and, oh, I love you, mommy, or I love you, auntie, and a big smile. That does it. Mm-hmm. Mind becomes quiet. You take a walk in nature, and there's no mosquitoes. Mind becomes, you know, so peaceful, so quiet. And then at that time, so they're all fulfilled desire states, where the mind is not asking for anything. Those times you feel, all is well with me. This is the truth. This is who I am. However, that recognition is brought about by a state of mind which resonates with me, the one who is present to that state of mind. See what I mean? State of mind, it's like, kind of like if I hold the clear water bucket up to the sun, that water is in a state of calm, so that the nature of the sun is reflected in the water in a way that is true to the sun. It resonates with how the sun actually is. And so now the water can say, ah, this is how it's supposed to be. But it's just getting, it's totally identified with its state of mind, you know, which is simpatico with the self that's illumining it. Now if I throw some mud in the water bucket, then the water's going to be, what happened? Now I'm so miserable, I was so happy, what happened to me? So you see, this is the ahankara. Well, I'm totally identified with these states of mind. And a good cup of coffee has to do only with a state of mind that has a shantavritti in it. Now, when I have vairagya, to the degree that I have vairagya, to that degree, less and less things are able to disturb that mind. Mm-hmm. To the degree I practice dharma, you know, which is something in all of the Indian traditions, we all really learn about dharma and values. Because to the degree that I can practice those values, and those values are more important to me than pleasure, than fulfilling my desires, to that degree, I have more shanti in the mind. And so I can say things like, you know, ever since I've practiced non-clinging, or ever since, you know, I've kind of grown and learned how to let go of things and not be so demanding, you know, I've noticed myself becoming much more whole and much more complete. No. But what I'm talking about is a state of mind. And the state of mind, you know, can be thrown off because the mind's nature is to think and to feel. You know, to have funny thoughts, to have funny emotions, you know, to have all kinds of things going on. And so if your state of well-being is dependent on mental maintenance, then that's not really, there's no nitya mukta there. Nitya mukta means I am free, period. I'm not dependent upon behaving in such a way, you know, so that my mind can have a shantavritti. That's not liberation. That's learning how to deal with your mind in a way that can, you know, keep a relative shanti there so that I can have a relative peace. Mm. So here, all of this, we would view all of Ramana, especially, and this is everything that he's talking about, verse after verse after verse. Who is the one bound? You know, is the mind, if the mind is having a time-bound shantavritti, the mind is bound. If you have a shantavritti, shanti means peace, you know. Vritti means the thought modification. So if you can have a shantavritti which can go, then that's bondage. Then you're going to be thinking, you know, you're in a state of bondage because you know when you're having the shantavritti that if I'm not really careful and handle everything properly, that will go away. That is bandha. That's bondage. So what he's saying is when you know it can go away, then you're bound by that fact. It's a fact. It can go away. And so your well-being is temporary. So that's bandha. Now he says, how to get rid of it? Well, it's by recognizing who does the bondage belong to and in that inquiry, who am I? No. For instance, if I have a shanta vritti and I enjoy the clear sun, and a sense of peace, a good cup of coffee, everything is fine with me, and then I recognize, and we take it a little further. Okay, now this very beautiful, peaceful thought, just ask the question, am I aware of it? Is that thought known to me? You have to say, yes, it is known. Now, and then what if you ask the question now, this thought, which is so beautiful, this thought is time-bound, right? Because we know that it's not going to stay. Mm-hmm. So this beautiful thought in which I feel whole is time-bound, subject to bondage. The thought is, the mind is. But now let's look at it. This beautiful thought is replaced by the thought of sadness as it starts to bleed away. The beautiful thought is bleeding away. Mm-hmm. And then what comes is kind of a sad thought, mm-hmm. because I lost my beautiful thought. Mm-hmm. But now the question is, the one who was there present to the sad, to the beautiful thought, is the same one who is present to the sad thought. And the ahankara, in fact, what it will say is, I had this beautiful moment of being whole, and now I have this terrible moment of being sad. Right? So what that means is there what we call an anuvritti. There's a presence, a me, that is present to the beautiful experience and equally present to the sad experience. That one's not bound by either experience, right? The one experience negates the other, but who am I? The one who illumines both. I'm not going to be bound by either one, because the one comes and the other comes and the next one comes and the next one comes and the next one comes. I'm not coming or going. These are coming or going. I'm not coming and going. Who is that one? Is that one bound? So the question would be, in all of the changing phenomena that includes all of my moods, my awareness of my body, my sickness and my health, all of my sense perceptions, all of my memories, all of the emotions that are taking place, all of these things, negate each other. When the one is, the other isn't. So they come and go, they come and go, they come and go. If there's someone here, me, who is not coming and going, if there's someone who's not coming and going, you can't say no. Because if you say no, then you're not here as the one for whom all of those experiences are. Right? Because even the ahankara, even though it's a false creature, it is correctly labeling the fact that there is someone present to all of those experiences. Is that one free or is that one bound? And what is the nature of that one? What is the nature of the one who is present to all the changing experiences? This is the vichara. And this vichara is what we call viveka. What viveka means is I have to analyze with the help of teaching. I have to analyze the experience that I'm having. Oops. Are you not hearing?
Still present to all these experiences.
Yeah, it's good. Isn't it? Remember, the one who's there, not engaged, is doing fine.
I couldn't help it.
A lot of people, I don't want them to miss it now. We're on the stage.
Wonderful.
So in light of this, I want you to just think for a minute about what actually happens, what you're actually doing in meditation. Because meditation is very helpful, but what meditation is all about really is at least initially, this type of viveka, where we're differentiating myself, my being, my presence, the me, from the experiences that are rising and setting in me. So that's much different than thinking of meditation as the attainment of a new experience. You know, like say I meditate and I'm quieting everything down so that I can have some sort of spiritual experience of a self that's not present now. To know yourself. In fact, in Advaita, if you just think of what the meaning of Advaita is non-dual means one without a second. One without a second means there's no second. And so that means that there is no place for you to go, no place for you to travel in order to recognize yourself. The recognition has to take place right here, right now. There's no distance between yourself and yourself. There's no big self. There's no little self that has to go into meet some big self in, you know, in some other dimension so that we can have, you know, really come face to face with ourselves. That isn't what it is. It is recognizing that myself is already 100%, not partially, 100% present. The problem is with the mind that is taking its own experiences to be one with my being that is absolutely pervasive and present to every experience I have. But see, this is part of the problem. Your mind is never without conscious being. When the thought is there, it enjoys me. It's like really the whole universe is like that. The whole universe totally enjoys me, kind of like the pot enjoys the clay. The whole universe enjoys me, but I'm concerned right now with this body, mind, sense organs. Whenever your mind is there, it isn't away from at all the awareful me, the awareful being, which we have labeled with the word I. So you see, when you say I, or I am, or if I say, use the word me or I, whatever, I am actually labeling me. Even the word me is properly labeling me, the conscious being. That makes me me. That perfect. Now, and that's a word, right? You know, just like if I say lamp. Lamp is labeling lamp. So the word me or the word I is labeling me. But because there's also some ignorance there on the part of the mind, it takes the me to be one with its thoughts, whatever the content of the thought is. So if the thought is sad, then the me, the self, the I is sad. This is where the viveka comes in, where I say, are you really sad, or are you the self illumining sadness? Are you aware of the sadness, or are you the sadness? You know, this is the viveka. You have to say, no, I'm aware of the sadness. You can also say, okay, the sadness is there. When the sadness goes, will you also go? No. Well, if you don't go, then you're not the sadness. Because the sadness goes, but you don't go. What is it that remains? In this experience of me, which is so confused by the mind, that's what we mean by the ahankara. The ahankara is the I thought arising from the self-ignorance of the mind that is labeling me correctly, I am the guy, the conscious being, and then incorrectly saying, I, the conscious being, am the mind. Mm. Or I, the conscious being, am this emotion. I, the conscious being, am this body. This body is an object of your awareness. You're not always aware of this body. You know, you're not thinking body, but all the time. You just check in all of the time with this object that you're aware of. Sense organs, you're not aware of your sense organs. You're using your sense organs. Sometimes you're focused on your sense organs. You're aware of whatever you're aware of. But the thing is, being aware of it. And I'm not talking in terms of knowership either. I'm just saying that the whole sphere of all of your experience is coming and going in the awareness, which is you. The awareful being, which is you. All experience, every thought in your mind, every emotion, every I thought, every perception, There's no exception. It's the entirety of your experience is coming and going in you, the awareful being. And you, the awareful being, are not coming and going. You're steady. You're Nityamukta. Now, we say Nityamukta means your being is by nature free, liberated, and it is Nitya, not bound by time. So you are stable. But if I say you are Nityamukta, is that mukta mean you are Nityamukta Dukkha? Do we want to be Nityamukta? You know, eternally liberated means in eternally whole. That my nature, the nature that I am, is not subject to any type of corruption. Now the question would be, do I like this person? This Nityamukta Atma? Is the Nityamukta Atma self someone that I would choose? Would I choose that? Or can I do better? You know? Could I make a better Nityamukta Atma? I would say like this. You can have choices like that in reference to your mind. You can always change your mind. You can change the quality of the mind. You can have all kinds of techniques, you know, to make the mind have more shanti, to make the mind more quiet. You can do all of these things. But that's all has to do with practice. But anyway, just think about this. In terms of whether you like yourself or not, you look at it like this. You love it when your mind is not interfering with you in any way. You know? Because when you were just shining, all is well with me. Some of you often joke, you know, the kind of the lazy man samadhi is when, you know, you go to sleep at night. You know, you should just imagine how much you really love yourself because you have a good mattress. I'm sure you've done everything that you can to best sleeping arrangement possible. The nicest bedding, the nicest pillows, you have a nice comforter so that you can cuddle up and into your bed and lay back and blot out the entire world. So, the only one left there is me. Without any, I don't even want in deep sleep, I don't want anybody saying, I don't want even my mind to be functioning, I don't want it to be saying, oh look, you're deep sleeping, no, you go to sleep too. All of you just totally go to sleep so I can just be. And then when the alarm goes off, you push that off. It's just, that's a very enjoyable state. You know, you come into that liminal state and then you can just go back again. Now next time in the morning, just notice what you are like. In contemplation, think about this. We do, everybody has now, in Berkeley, Bay Area, we all have a meditation practice. Notice what that is like. What do you do in meditation? Well, often, I mean, there are many different types of meditation, but one of them, a very common one, is I just totally relax my body. I get myself into a quiet environment. I get myself into a comfortable position. So no sound, I withdraw from all sound. I get my body so comfortable that I don't notice it at all. Right? And in fact, Swamiji's even said in some of his guided meditations, I'll have, you know, you're sitting, he'll have you sit like this with your hands like that. Your hands should become so relaxed that you can't feel the outline of them. Your body becomes so relaxed that it's not creating any disturbance for you or beckoning your attention in any way. And then you may do some deep breathing exercises to relax the mind. You might do some japa to stop the thought flow. And then you may turn, with nididhyasana, you may just turn the mind just into your own being. And just abide there by yourself, as yourself. Why would you do that? No. Certainly not because it's such a miserable experience. You do it because of your own nature. And to get rid of all of the problems of the world or all of the things that draw your mind out, just to have that time out, just to be in your own presence. But there comes a time, and what Ramana is talking about here, what about when you recognize your own presence, which is changelessly present amidst all of the phenomena that is going on in the world? All of the moods, all of the emotions, all of the thoughts, all of the perceptions, you know? What if your mind, which is normally totally engaged in these, trying to make shantavrittis out of the whole thing, is not worried about that at all, but is recognizing that stable presence that's there no matter what is going on? It's that stable presence that's Nityamukta. That's the Nityamukta. It's not coming or going, and its own nature is whole and complete. So when that is recognized, then this question, you know, about this anxiety about bondage or moksha, these things aren't there at all, because you found yourself. So that's why it says, for a person who's recognized me, where is there the bandhachinta? Where is there this worry about bondage? And where is there this worry about moksha? It isn't there. But it's only not there when the one who is free has been recognized. That's the thing. This bondage and moksha, both things belong to samsara. They belong to the mind that has, you know, misidentified me with itself. And then, of course, I'm kind of lost in the changing phenomena of the world, and this is all bound. And I'm continually trying to set it free, at least temporarily. You know, but my being, I don't have to set free. It's not bound, and it doesn't need to be freed, because it's not bound by nature. That's the nature. So, let's pull this up there. Let's just take a moment. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamadakshate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavasishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha.